Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Kyle Rittenhouse's defense continued to present its case before the jury yesterday. The most interesting developments came with the testimony of Drew Hernandez, who's an independent journalist. And Drew Hernandez has covered a lot of the civil unrest around the country over the last year, the riots across America's major cities. And his pertinent testimony was on matters like what he had a first-person account to see as it pertained to Rittenhouse and what transpired that evening in Kenosha, including as it pertains to one JoJo Rosenbaum.
And the first thing I did identify was that Rosenbaum was charging Kyle Rittenhouse from behind. And then as he's charging him into the Car Source parking lot, a firearm goes off. You can see it in the frame at the top of the car.
Can I ask you this? Stop you for a second. Yeah. Did you hear that real time?
Hear it and saw it in real time.
Okay, go ahead.
And as the first firearm goes off, Rosenbaum is already charging Kyle from behind, attempts to throw a bag at him, not sure what's inside of it. And Kyle is right at the corner right there, the car source, and turns around, and Rosenbaum is lunging towards him very clearly, and Kyle fires.
And do you see that with your eyes?
Yes.
So, again, just more eyewitness testimony in support of Rittenhouse's self-defense contention. JoJo Rosenbaum, who was – he's the convicted child molester. Uh-huh. He was caught on video creating ruckuses all night, trying to push flaming garbage dumpsters into police lines and the like.
And there's video of him pushing women. He didn't care. He was on fire. He was a dumpster fire that night, looking to get people. He was just a professional agitator, and he didn't stop. But here's the thing. I did the disservice yesterday of reading his arrest record. He lived in Pima County in Tucson, Arizona. He would court women at playgrounds to get to their children. And he sodomized kids ages 9 to 11, and he has 11 counts of doing that. He's sick. And then he went back to Kenosha, and he's got a battery for domestic abuse, too, in Kenosha.
Again, it doesn't
I know he
mean
wasn't
that,
tried on that. I get that. But I'm just saying this was not a mentally stable human being.
No, he was diagnosed bipolar, as I understand it. The point is his behavior. And his behavior vis-a-vis Rittenhouse, and whether or not, in addition to the testimony you've heard from people like Drew Hernandez and the video that was captured by a number of citizen journalists and again, one former New York Times digital editor that night, is that consistent with somebody who was out of control and has violent propensities and, I think it's pretty straightforward. So all of the testimony, even the prosecution's case, as we've talked about this week, this is one summation from the left, from Chris Hayes over at MSNBC. If you don't know, he's the Rachel Maddow impersonator that they have over there. They're indistinguishable, as is their rhetoric, of course, because they're all reading from the same script. So this is the script. This is the script of the left. Please take note when you listen to Chris Hayes' commentary about his belief that Rittenhouse will probably be acquitted. And we've had a bunch of people on the left say, well, he'll probably be acquitted. And so it's remarkable to me how casually they say that, as if the fact that the state is not even close to proving its case calling into question whether charges should have ever been brought. That is, you know, an ancillary issue rather than a central tenet of our justice system. And that something should be discussed here, commented upon with respect to bringing charges for political reasons, rather bringing charges where you believe you have enough evidence to clear the reasonable doubt threshold and put people through the sort of ringer that comes with being accused of any crime, much less a capital crime. It's just casually pushed aside that they don't believe the prosecution has made its case because all they're interested in is politics, including politicizing the justice system. Chris Hayes.
He heard warnings about the boogeyman of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and he took this illegally acquired assault weapon, which he admits not for hunting or for home defense, and he throws himself at the fray in Kenosha, and he kills two people. The boy who killed people, is then celebrated by the same pro-gun law and order culture that produced him as a hero and a martyr. And he's bailed out with the help of right-wing activists, and he poses for a photo grinning in the T-shirt of a long gun-themed coffee company that then courted controversy from the right when it distanced itself from this person, this boy who'd killed two people accused of homicide. There's a legal question before the jury right now of Kyle Rittenhouse's guilt or innocence. It's being determined, will be determined. From what I've seen, I think it's pretty likely he'll be acquitted, honestly. But there's also the broader question of what kind of society we want to live in. Ask yourself that. If you're watching this and you're a gun owner or someone who considers yourself a defender of the Second Amendment, abstractly, right? Ask yourself, do we want a society in which political conflict is settled on the streets between people with guns? One in which everyone is armed and can therefore view the other people armed as a plausible threat, which appears to what happened on the streets of Kenosha. Is that the society we want? Because that's the outcome the pro-gun lobby is hoping to bring about, is bringing about. Go ask the families of those two dead men. And they're doing it through lots of channels, including through an upcoming Supreme Court ruling, which the conservative majority could very feasibly broaden its interpretation of the Second Amendment to one that essentially requires all states to permit adult Americans to carry a concealed weapon basically all the time for whatever purpose they want. It's not just a theoretical argument. It is happening now. It happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and in the chamber of the highest court in the land.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
So he starts with so-called boogeymen, BLM and Antifa. Those aren't boogeymen, they're real, and their acts of violence are real. Mm-hmm. Then he ends by actually raising the specter of boogeymen, law-abiding gun owners. Do you want our political differences settled on the streets with guns? He says this commenting on a case that grew out of a mob that sacked Kenosha amid a summer of mobs sacking major cities.
Destroyed almost every business in downtown Kenosha in some form or fashion, whether it was smashing a window, smashing grabs, or just lighting the place on fire.
What kind of society do you want to live in?
I don't want to live in that society. I want to live in a society with Kyle Rittenhouse.
The ability to offer that commentary against the facts in this case and the context in which those facts played out, that's one of the better ones I've heard recently. I got to give Chris Hayes credit. That is one of the better pieces of agitprop I've heard recently.
Well, mine came
Jim
from
in Crown Point. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, it's amazing how the Democrats have a narrative, so they will frame everything in their narrative. It has nothing to do with facts. It's to influence you to believe what they are saying, even though you're watching something totally different. I wish that the guy who had his bicep blown off, the bullet went a little higher. The two that this guy eliminated were scum. They are scum of the earth. I'm glad they thinned the herd by two. I think the pendulum is swinging the other way, and I think we'll get back to law and order.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, Rosenbaum should have been in jail anyway, but they let him out because they reduced charges against him. So that was that lies on the judicial system in Pima County.
Chris and the Dan Ryan.
Real quick. Can you imagine if we had a better society where, people such as Mr. Hayes was actually out in the real world and not an insulated little MSNBC world, and he could actually, come to Chicago or come to Detroit or come to a city that is ravaged by people who don't care about laws? I mean, I think his tune would change. Don't you agree?
Well, yeah, mugged by reality. Thanks for the call, Chris. Some people need to be mugged by reality. I just mean, intellectually, not physically. But sometimes it takes one to affect the other. I don't know. I'll tell you, the prosecutors also need to be included in this case because the cross-examination of that independent journalist, Drew Hernandez.
Yeah, who had his own attorney, which the prosecution was upset that he had hired his own attorney, which is his business. But anyway, he got in a fight again with the judge.
The cross-examination of Drew Hernandez bordered on the comical. Let me give you an example of that. Drew Hernandez, I told you, he's been covering the riots that went on last summer throughout America's major cities. And this was the prosecutor attempting to create the impression of some sort of bias or a political agenda that's coloring Drew Hernandez's testimony.
Your videos that you have captured of these incidents that you call riots, they're very slanted against the people who are rioting. You characterize them as Antifa, Black Lives Matter rioters, correct?
Because they are rioting in the footage, yes, absolutely.
Yes, the reason that I'm characterizing that as those rioters as rioting is because they're rioting.
We're
getting into the Orwellian effort to redefine the language. You're biased because you're videoing people that are engaged in looting and destruction of public property and private property, and you characterize these people as rioters. Well, yes, because they are rioting.
And they're not at the library reading. One thing that I saw yesterday that boiled my blood was The View. And I know I shouldn't be surprised, just listen.
From what I'm gleaning from this case, the guy goes across state lines with an AR-15 with his mother and some other idiot in the car to defend himself against what? They're having a protest in another state, and he takes it upon himself to go there, and then he says it's self-defense. No. And that acting job of the crying, I can't even look at it.
Well, this is the... And then the train seals clap. But people should know, he worked in Kenosha. His stepfather lives in Wisconsin. It's not like crossing state lines. They don't know Antioch and Kenosha are right near each other. And he worked as a lifeguard there. He was part of the community. So they're not listening to the facts. They're just
the man-hating shrews and their gaggle of harridans at The View. You might as well have a live audience in River Forest of these housewives. I mean, they're just the worst people in the world. And also, and it's attendant to being the worst, dumbest, most ignorant people in the world. You watch The View, you deserve to lose whatever IQ points you have left. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, this show isn't for everybody. If you're not interested in the truth, if you're not interested in having a conversation on the merits, then don't listen to this show.
On AM 560.
Because there's no place for you here.
The Answer.
Dan and Amy, good morning, and we're talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and we left off with the performance of Thomas Binger and the prosecution team. We've got exclusive audio of Thomas Binger talking to Kenosha County District Attorney Michael Gravely, assuring him that he has this case under control.
Mr. Simpson, don't you worry. I watched Matlock in a bar last night. The sound wasn't on, but I think I got the gist of it.
I don't know why he referred to Gravely as Mr. Simpson, but I think you get the point about Binger's Lionel Hutz moments throughout this trial, including yesterday where he queried independent journalist Drew Hernandez as to why his videos showing rioters rioting seem to be slanted against the rioting rioters.
Just absurd and stupid. I mean, my God.
They also got into wordplay. Again, this was an attempt to undermine Drew Hernandez's eyewitness testimony, suggesting that he was biased in favor of Rittenhouse, that he was not an objective observer, just relaying the facts. They got into a fight over the meaning of the word apparently.
On August 25th, a few minutes after these shootings, you posted on Twitter your opinion as to whether the defendant in your mind was right or wrong in doing what he did, correct?
No, I said apparently at the beginning of that statement.
What effect does that have?
It means apparently. It doesn't mean that this is 100% my opinion.
You had already jumped to a conclusion, an apparent conclusion at that moment, right?
That's what apparently means.
This is my impression. I'm sorry, I don't do impressions. My field is in the training of psychiatry, of course. It's somewhere between a Lionel Hutz episode and an airplane movie with these guys. Drew Hernandez went on with Tucker Carlson last night to talk about his testimony in court and why he testified.
Well, I immediately started getting messages on social media, people telling me to kill myself because I, quote unquote, defended a murderer. Here's the thing, Tucker. People are accusing me of being biased. Even the prosecution was trying to paint this picture that I came in with some kind of bias. My only bias is one thing, the truth. And that's what I was doing today in that courtroom. I wasn't there to give a political opinion. I wasn't there to put a spin on anything. I was there because I was an eyewitness. And I also have body cam footage of the entire night, which I submitted to the defense and to the prosecution, to the state as a whole. I was not there at all to have any kind of opinion to be stated. I was there to do simply one thing, and that's to tell the truth. Because he who speaks the truth declares righteousness. And that is a lost art in the United States of America right now. And I knew I had to do the right thing so that the jury could know, the state could know, America could know, and that the world could know the truth.
In addition to that, we heard from Wendy Rittenhouse last night. Sean Hannity interviewed Kyle Rittenhouse's mom. And she, you know, talked about the difficulty of watching her son testify, the general difficulty of how he's been vilified by certain people, including, say, the President of the United States. First, Wendy on Kyle's tearful testimony, you know, ridiculed by the blue check mafia and deep intellects like LeBron James.
I just broke down with Kyle crying like that. It made me feel heartbroken, sad. And I wanted to just go up there and just hug him and tell him it would be okay.
And Wendy Rittenhouse on her son being characterized from the outset by Joe Biden and others as a white supremacist, candidate Joe Biden. I mean, he tweeted it out. The President Trump won't condemn white supremacy, and it was a picture of Kyle Rittenhouse. This is Wendy Rittenhouse's feelings about Joe Biden and those who would characterize her son as such.
I was angry. President Biden don't know my son whatsoever, and he's not a white supremacist. He's not a racist. And he did that for the votes. And I was so angry for a while at him. And what he did to my son, he defamed him.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Now, of course, there's also been criticism of Wendy Rittenhouse. Why would she let her 17-year-old son go up to Kenosha with a sport rifle in those dangerous circumstances of a city being sacked by, dare I say, rioters and barbarian hordes? Why would she do that? Is that a failure of Wendy as mom? What say you?
I mean, I wouldn't have allowed my kids to go. My kids tried to go to BLM protests in the city, not last summer, the summer before, and I actually went with them because I wanted them to see what really was going on. We rode our bikes next to protesters who had signs that say, blank America, They were screaming at cops. We were by the 19th district, and both of Peyton and Eli said, all right, Mom, we've had enough. And now they have changed their opinion about Black Lives Matter and what they really stand for. But I would not have allowed my child to go up to that situation.
Sean,
but she might not have known. Did she know that he went? I mean, because, you know, they're 17. They can say they're going to their friend's house, and they can go anywhere, really.
Well, right. I don't know those details. I don't know that they've been I don't know that they've come out or been reported, not that I've seen. Sean in Crown Point.
Good morning. You kind of already answered my question about how a mother would let a 17-year-old minor go and do that. Yes. But there was a black woman in Baltimore, and her kid was out there rioting, as you say. And she went out there and got her kid and told him to get his butt home.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's what my dad would have done to me. Yep. If I was 17 and in his house and go out with a rifle and go shoot somebody, I better not come home.
Yeah, that was during the Freddie Gray protest. Call, remember Sean. That? She went out there and she grabbed him by the hair and was like, you get back home right now. It was classic.
Well, I remember that, but unfortunately that's the exception, not the rule, isn't it?
Right. And also, too, Dan, I don't know if you saw this, but CBS News tweeted out to millions of people on their Twitter page. Kyle Rittenhouse testified in his murder trial yesterday, breaking down in tears as he told the jury he murdered two men at the Black Lives Matter. So they prematurely convicted Kyle Rittenhouse, and they tried to delete the tweet, but it was already out there.
Why stop now?
Yeah. I mean,
they prematurely convicted him from the outset.
CBS News.
Jim on the South Side. Hey, Jim.
Good morning. Watching Kyle break down on Wednesday and then watching The View and all these clips that was coming on about on MSNBC, it just, you know, they're making fun of a poor kid. Look at this little poor kid. He's crying. And all these rich people, all these famous people like LeBron, you know, they see this poor kid crying on the stands, and they always make fun of him. And the rich have been doing it to the poor for years. I don't know if you remember the 96 bombing in Atlanta. I can't remember the guy's name they charged with it.
Richard Jewell.
He was a trailer house guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the media then, too, was just like, look at this white trash guy.
Yeah.
You know, they did the same thing. The government came down on this guy. White people, poor people don't have a chance with the media, apparently. And if Kyle, he's a chubby little kid. They just make fun of him because he's not this great looking elite guy like they are, like mm-hmm. LeBron, like Joy Reid, like that Tim Hayes thing. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Well, they're just mad he's not a white supremacist.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, you know, right. I mean, it's J.D. Vance. It's mm-hmm. a hillbilly elegy. You know, poor white people, particularly if they're Christian. On top of it. They're absolute fair game, open season to be ridiculed, to be treated as, dare I say, a favorite phrase of the left, the other. They're the other. Open season on poor white people, poor white Christian people in particular. And yes, this is not limited. I think it is largely socioeconomic, more so than race. But obviously you have goons and thugs that are part of Black Lives Matter. And I'm not talking about the check writers in Wilmette. I'm talking about the goofballs on the streets that are poor and undereducated too. Not all, but a lot, some. And they're, it's open for ridicule there too. But I mean, but the media and the sort of culture, the cultural mavens at least, will rally to the defense of their mascots. And that's minorities, regardless, particularly poor minorities, because they are racists, and so they have this view of poor minorities as they don't have agency. They don't have the ability to manage their own lives. That's what I'm here for, and I'm going to manage their life from Glencoe. That's the attitude. But it's exactly right, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, on the South Side, because all this ridicule, the comments and where they're coming from does speak to a cultural phenomenon about rich and poor, about rich left and poor white. It absolutely does. John in West Chicago.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I just wanted to say that Kyle, there was a curfew in place And Kyle, it was only supposed to be Kyle that was supposed to be under that curfew, and nobody
they dropped
else.
Those charges, it seems they dropped the curfew.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying. You know, that was just. You know, that was one of the things that was brought up. I just, you know, it's just so irritating that they could just blame this kid for everything. It's crazy.
Right. Right. So. Right. Thanks for the call. Right. They threw in as lesser included offense a curfew charge. How many other people were charged with curfew violations that night?
Right.
Mm-hmm. John in Bridgeport.
Hey guys, long time no talk. A couple things. One, I didn't know that Rittenhouse was running away from the scene. He was trying to gain cover, in my opinion, trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
Two, I'm seeing some similarities between Nicholas Sandman, the kid from Covington, Kentucky Catholic, and what the media did to him and this guy. Third, I'm not so sure when this is all said and done. This kid's got some guts. For him to come up there and testify and defend himself on the witness stand, which is a lot more than other people would do. That's impressive. In addition to what he did in Kenosha. I'm just saying. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Jason in Northlake.
I mean, there's a couple of things that I'd like to take off. But the number one is it's so telling in the fact that all I keep hearing over and over again from the leftist media is this boy went from Illinois to Wisconsin, as if the border between Illinois and Wisconsin is sacrosanct, right, but the southern border is not. And then when the prosecution is cross-examining Kyle, I learned a couple of things about Kenosha law. Is that number one, a skateboard is not a weapon. Number two, if you're lying on your back with a rifle and somebody's pointing a pistol at you, that has been verified or testified that there's a round in the chamber ready to fire, that the rifle overpowers the pistol. So a pistol's not a weapon.
Right.
And then also, too, is, I mean, it's just astonishing what this prosecutor's saying. So I'm just like, okay, you know, it's just unbelievable. And this guy, this prosecutor really needs to be disbarred because this is just totally gross and disgusting.
Thanks for the call, Jason. Not to mention the testimony from one witness that he attempted to get a witness to change the statements he made to the police, which is a serious allegation that was made in open court. So we'll see what comes of that. But you're right. I mean, the whole he crossed state lines. He made the arduous journey from Antioch to Kenosha.
It's like going from Arlington Heights to Schaumburg, people. I mean, get a grip. That's why I was with Joy Behar and all those ghastly women at the View.
That is a good point. I didn't really think of it.
No, it's right there.
I know, but I didn't really think of what they were doing until Jason made the point about this. Like, you know, he had real purpose because he journeyed to faraway lands north of the Cheddar Curtain in order to be there in Kenosha. Right, it's a stone's throw. Exactly. John in Urbana.
Yeah, what's happening to this country? It's getting so a child rapist can point a gun at a kid without the kid shooting back. Come on, man.
All right, John. And something else, though, too. This was also on Tucker last night. This is you know, what's happening to this country? This is a real what's happening to this country question. This guy, William Kelly, is a Norfolk, Virginia cop who was fired for making a $25 anonymous donation to the Kyle Rittenhouse Legal Defense Fund.
What?
Listen.
Well, Tucker, they mentioned several things that they thought were policy violations. The first thing that they thought that I broke, the first policy they thought I broke, was that I was acting as a spokesperson for the city of Norfolk when I anonymously donated, to the Rittenhouse Fund. They also said that I broke a policy about social media, even though the Give, Send, Go website that I donated to is not a social media platform. They said I broke policy in that I acted in a manner inconsistent with the city's values. And finally, they said that I engaged in conduct unbecoming a police officer.
And he is in the process of, he's filed a grievance to get his job
he
back.
Should,
yeah, he's also going to file suit. But I mean, a $25 anonymous donation, talk about you know, headhunting for anybody associated with this on the wrong side of where the media and the left elite are. This Norfolk, Virginia cop, $25 anonymous donation, somebody tips somebody off and he loses his job as a police officer. That's where it's at. Jordan in Antioch.
Did LeBron James, the guy who perfected the flop, comment on somebody making crocodile tears? Is that lost on anybody else? I mean,
yeah,
the man who has made a career out of the flop now makes a comment about crocodile tears. That should tell you a lot. And I'm surprised nobody's jumped on that on tweet. I'll wait. I'm Donald Trump or Donald Trump Jr. I'm sure will probably have something to say about that. But hilarious.
Thanks, Jordan. Chet and Lyle.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Another aspect of this is prosecutorial abuse. And I think people should take the time to watch the 30 for 30 special on the Duke of Cross case.
Mm.
Amazing the length at which prosecutors will go to press their case.
Thanks for the call, Chet. Yeah, William Nifong lost his law license after that performance as well. He should have. You're right. I mean, you know, the canon of legal canon is you go where the facts lead. But how it actually works in practice is, you know, you win at all costs. And that's not the job of the prosecutor, to win at all costs. The job is to go where the facts lead before charging and making sure you, again, have a case in chief that clears that reasonable doubt standard. And then if there is evidence that comes to light that tends to undermine, you walk away, right? What is the one of the aphorisms intended to describe the principles of our justice system? Better 1,000 men go free than one guilty man be imprisoned. Is that the coda you see playing out in Kenosha and in so many other examples in our justice system? No, it isn't. Very concerning. Should be. Jim in St. Joe, Michigan.
Yes, good morning. Enjoy your show. Happy belated birthday, Amy.
Thank you.
I just want to comment. The left just hates anything that's good, and I think Dennis Prager said that too. And these people just play to their own crowd. And I would just like to say, living out here in the Midwest, there's more of us than there is of them. They just have the left-wing news media. And that's all I got to say, and I enjoy your show. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
There's a saying, if you tell a lie over and over and over and over, eventually it becomes the truth. We have seen this before. We saw this with Russian collusion. Remember? Adam Schiff kept telling that lie over and over and over, and eventually it became an impeachment. Now, what you're looking at right now is a bigger picture, okay? This is not about Carl Rittenhouse. This is about the Russian. This is about the January the 6th insurrection. The FBI have already concluded that there was no conspiracy, but because they want to keep going, and they want to keep telling this lie over and over and over, they want to eventually make it the truth. What is the truth?
Thanks for the call, Lewis. You're right about, you know, the constant need to identify white supremacists and white supremacy even where they don't exist to perpetuate the racial politics that the left has made their stock and trade. That's a good point, too. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's Vaccination Awareness Day in Chicago, so we want to make you aware of some things relating to vaccinations. Here's one. In response to an attorney's FOIA request, and please note, an attorney, the Centers for Control admits it has no record, none, not a single record, of an unvaccinated person spreading COVID after recovering from COVID. So what do you think is going on there? Well, let me tell you. What's going on there is people who are being fired for not taking the vaccination after having had the virus and recovering, so they have natural immunity, are suing, and not just their employers, but part of efforts against the OSHA directive that undermine the mandates and undermine any sort of emergency response these mandates are that ostensibly triggered these mandates. Not a single case the CDC can point to, per this lawyer's FOIA, of somebody who was infected and recovered infecting another person with all of the glorious contact tracing programs country over. Not a single case. And so here again, this is where I'm, you know, putting my bets in terms of where I think the best place to focus people's attention on the folly of all of this, on the ascientific basis for all of this. If you do not treat the naturally immune as vaccinated or better, then you are not serious about anything related to COVID. It is completely about control.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
In addition to that, we have this research paper out of India, the country of India, the Indian Institute of Chemical Biology, in conjunction with a life science lab there, University of California, San Diego, that finds the following top lines. Overall immune response resulting from natural infection in and around Kolkata is better than that generated by vaccination, especially in the case of the Delta variant. And natural infection is also, quote, a better driver of virus-specific cell-mediated immune response than both vaccines. A better driver of virus-specific cell-mediated immune response than both the mRNA and vaccines. So again, I know Tony Fauci doesn't have a firm answer for us on this, but you're talking about millions of people, tens of millions of Americans who got infected and recovered. You're talking about probably at least in the hundreds of thousands of those who've recovered who are resisting the vaccine mandates and putting their jobs and careers on the line to do so. So this is important. And what the CDC is admitting it doesn't have, and what we already knew, we've known for a long time, about natural immunity. I mean, you know, some people, as we talked earlier in the week, date back to like 450 BC in Athens. But anyway, we know about this, and yet these distinctions won't be made. So if those distinctions won't be made, despite all of the scientific evidence, everything that we know, then what does that say about those who refuse to make the distinctions? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. And Amy, you can put that to the folks over at CPS as well.
Yeah, I mean, here's today's, you know, Vaccination Awareness Day. And they're, you know, today Mayor Lightfoot's going to get her booster shot along with First Lady Amy. They're doing this big thing rollout, and they're paying kids $100. You get your gift card, your Visa gift card today. And it's protect your health on the 12th, Dan. That's the new motto here today. And it's ridiculous because we just learned this morning all city employees, including CPS teachers, are getting paid for 2 hours extra. So they're throwing money at people to take 2 hours off today or over the weekend, so they'll pay you two for that, to go get yourself vaccinated or your kids vaccinated. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the truth is, why we have this Vaccination Awareness Day, if all of you guys want to know the truth, it's because we didn't have enough substitute teachers today, because we had yesterday off, and today there's substitute teachers, but there's not enough to cover for the entire city because the teachers wanted a four-day weekend.
Well, I sure hope that Lightfoot and that Arnie Duncan impersonator that she's married to, I sure hope they don't have the adverse reactions that happened in a Michigan school that shut down after a large number of staff had adverse reactions to the COVID booster jab. I sure hope it goes better for them than it apparently did, reportedly did, for Gavin Newsom.
And here's the thing. Dr. Awardi said It's mind-numbing. We need to be 100% vaccinated in schools in order to be unmasked. Are you kidding me? That's not a feasible, realistic goal.
The most important thing, of course, is getting vaccinated. I would love to be in a place where, for example, fully vaccinated settings, we could potentially drop the mask. This is a conversation we've been having with the state, et cetera.
Fully vaccinated? Where in the world? You can't get people fully vaccinated for the flu. Or for polio, or for measles, or for chickenpox. I mean, that is not going, and that's the metric that needs to be in place in order for our kids to drop their masks and for us to drop our masks.
And it's going to start ratcheting up against the unvaccinated, regardless of whether you're naturally immune or not, it would seem. You have Austria suggesting the possibility of locking down the unvaccinated.
Oh, my.
You have Gene Simmons echoing the Austrian instincts, which is an ironic thing to do for a Jew. Gene Simmons, Mr. Lick It Up,
yeah,
in a recent Love interview, he declared war on the unvaccinated. They're our enemies. You know, noted rocker slash epidemiologist Gene Simmons.
I don't care about your political beliefs. You are not allowed to infect anybody just because you think you've got rights that are delusional, of course. You don't have the right to go through a red light. Actually, the government has the right to tell you to stop. You have to put on a seatbelt. If they tell you you can't smoke in a building, you can't smoke in a building. And that's not because they want to take away your rights. It's because the rest of us hate it. We don't want to smell your smoke. I don't want to catch your disease. I don't want to risk my life just because you want to go through a red light. This whole idea, this delusional, evil idea that you get to do whatever you want and the rest of the world be damned is really terrible. We got to identify those people and bring them out into the open so you know who they are.
Right.
You know who your friends are by how much they care about you.
Amen to that.
That includes COVID. If you're willing to walk among us unvaccinated, you are an enemy.
If you're willing to walk among us unvaccinated, you are an enemy. They need to be brought out to the public and identified. What do you think, Gene? Some sort of numbering system? I mean, I hate to make these comparisons, but I'm not the one offering the same prescription. Vince in Crete, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So if you are working and you're not vaccinated, you lose your job and your way of feeding your family. But if you're on welfare or any kind of social programs and you're not vaccinated, you still get to collect your benefits. What's the reason for that?
Well, that's a very good question, Vince. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I haven't seen any vaccine requirement for transfer benefits for your EBT card. Has anybody seen any vax mandate to get your EBT card, EBT benefits?
My EBT card got cut off.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Well, both of them. I'm very sad.
And it's party's despite over. Being vaccinated, too. I mean, I know. You did your best. I mean, again, you have states moving to protect those who are unvaccinated in terms of unemployment benefits to a system they paid into. I haven't seen anybody yet. There have been suggestions, though. Any state yet say you're cut off from unemployment benefits if you get fired for being non-compliant with the vax mandates, but that's still out there. Lock them down, bring them out into the open and identify them. Evil enemies. That's what they actually think about people who are resisting these mandates, masks or vaxes. That's what they actually think.
Right. It's so un-Christian. I don't want to live in this society anymore. Living in Illinois is so draining on your soul.
Robert in Bloomingdale.
Good morning. I would like to know if Gene Simmons is maybe on the payroll of Pfizer or Moderna or something, because some of these people, the way they're talking, you know, they're acting so well, maybe they're being paid for it.
Mm. Thanks for the call, Robert. Gene Simmons certainly doesn't need the money.
I would dress up as Gene Simmons all the time and make money. Because I have a tongue as long as his, if not longer. Just on a side.
Interesting factoid.
Thank you. I'm just letting you know.
People did not know.
I used to dress up, and when I worked at Walter Payton's 34, it's called Showtime. Mm-hmm. I would dress up as Gene Simmons because I have the outfit, and yeah, that's what I would do.
Really?
Spit blood. I didn't spit blood, but I had blood pills, like, you know, the fake
people,
ones.
People don't know this. You briefly dated Shannon Tweed, Gene Simmons' longtime partner. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I did.
Maybe in the 8 o'clock hour, a rendition of Lick It Up?
I could do that. Mm-hmm. But rock, I want to rock and roll all night. It's my favorite one.
I see.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
All right. Didn't know the Kiss connection.
Yeah.
Jerry in Knoxville, Tennessee.
I would just like to point out, I guess it's hypocrisy, and I'm really stunned at Gene Simmons, because his mentality towards people who are unvaccinated is the same exact mentality 20 years ago when people called Kiss the Knights in Satan's service. You know, we've gone from herd immunity to herd mentality. That's unbelievable. That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Jerry. Marvin in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Yeah, good morning. I just wish I knew who to trust. I mean, from someone who's had it, a tough time with it, too, I don't know that I don't want to ever get vaccinated. I mean, all the things I hear from the educated people you have in your station says don't get vaccinated. But we have the AMA, which is basically, tell me if I'm wrong, a political organization who stood behind Obama for Obamacare.
Yes.
And there is apparently behind even CRT education and the kids. I mean, how do you even trust your doctor? I mean, who are we supposed to go to and trust? From what I see in the news, it's coming down to.
Well, I mean, here's what I'd say. And by the way, on this show, we've had doctors, medical professionals, experts in these infectious disease areas give a range of opinions. So it's not uniform.
Yes,
that's fine.
I know, but Dr. Stephen Hatfield, I mean, he was on for a brief time, and sometimes he was hard to hear, but he's the one who really, I mean, hit home for me about,
what I would say, Marvin, especially since you've had it and you've recovered, and I know because you detailed it on the show that you had a tough time with it, hospitalized,
yeah.
It was serious, is, you know, this is something where, you know, so now you have natural immunity, and this is something that you have to do in consultation with your doctor. Maybe it does make sense to get vaccinated, maybe not immediately after you've recovered, but maybe down the road. I don't know the answer to it, but I know a process that makes sense, which is here's Marvin's risk profile, here's Marvin's health history that his doctor knows. In consultation with your doctor, what makes sense for Marvin? That's the approach that we should be taking rather than, and we discussed this with Julius Rochelle yesterday, this idea that you do these things even if it's adverse to your interests. You do these things for some greater public good. That is contrary to the Nuremberg Code. That is contrary to good sense. We've never done that with respect to vaccinations or medical procedures on free people. And we're doing that now, and that is a dangerous precedent we're setting. Thanks for the call.
Yes,
appreciate it. Craig in Burr Ridge.
If they're paying people to get this vaccination, my price is $5 million tax-free. Give me $5 million tax-free, I'll gladly get vaccinated. Thank you very much.
Everybody has a price, too. Everybody has a unique risk profile, and everybody has a price. Okay. All right, $5 million. Pass that on to the bursar's office downtown. Chip in St. Charles.
I like the price thing. Weren't they paying $450 to illegal aliens? Anyway, the nice gentleman from KISS was talking about the driving laws and how we all have to pay attention to those. But I drive for a living, and most people don't pay attention to those. So it's not much of an argument.
Yeah, it's a terrible analogy, but also if you want to use it, Gene, you know why people don't want to run red lights routinely is because of the risk associated with getting hit by another car who's
exactly.
got a green light.
Right.
It's, you know, there's a system, and people buy into the system because of the norms of stopping at red lights and going at green lights, Gene.
Yeah.
But anyway,
people don't want to wreck their cars because they want to drive their cars.
Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hey, good morning, Dan. You're right. You know, we are about doctors. We are individuals, so your doctor should treat you as such. And many of them out there don't. They cite studies and all this other stuff. And I'm like, My name is Mary Kay. I'm your patient. Look at my history. Judge me on my, or advise me on my history. Anyway, that's just a side note. My, you know, I'm so upset all the time with everything going on. My husband asked me to please stop watching the news and listening every single morning.
He's
like, please don't stop it, Mary Kay. I want free testing for antibodies, you know. I mean, and they'll never do it, of course, but, I mean, wouldn't it be nice if you could just go get a blood test real quick somewhere and get your antibodies screened, and then you would have proof that for your argument, you know?
Yeah, the only COVID. Well, yeah, thanks for the comment, Kate, but the problem is the proof doesn't matter to these people.
Well, it should,
We don't need proof. We have mandates, you see.
Right, but, I mean, we had somebody speak at our breakout session at Freedom Summit that talks about, you know, if you get 24, that's a high antibody number, and they should be considering that. That means you've got better coverage than you do if you've been vaccinated.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Interesting Twitter thread from a resident of West Los Angeles who is moving to Texas. I've lived in West LA for 5 years and I'm finally giving up on it. By the end of the year, I'll be a Texan. Below are my anecdotal observations and experiences, all of which have been exacerbated. Not created, just exacerbated by the pandemic. 20 reasons. And think about his 20 reasons to leave Hotel California and where you're at vis-a-vis Illinois, and see if these ring relevant to you here in the land of Lincoln, so long as that remains. Because some of this is not just the taxes and business climate thing. It's a lot more, there's actually a lot more cultural than there is financial. And the numbers for Illinois, which has over the last decade been the state in which the most percentage of its residents want to leave in the country. More residents of Illinois want to leave Illinois than any other state's residents want to leave their home state. And I don't know if that's not an indictment of what's happening at the cultural and governmental level, then I don't know what is. Usually cited in the surveys has been taxes, the cost of living effectively. But it's not limited to that. And that may be changing, particularly during the pandemic. Maybe there are some new issues that have arisen that were included in the list but down the list, and they've moved up the list over the last year and a half. I don't know. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The number one reason for this West LA denizen, COVID hysteria. Masks still mandated indoors, won't be going away anytime soon. That sounds familiar.
Never, yeah. We can relate to that, huh?
Uh-huh. COVID response. LA had the strictest lockdowns in the U.S., restricting outdoor dining and beaches. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, we had that happen too. 18 miles of the lakefront, she shut down, and then all those parks and walkways. Yeah.
The city shut off people's utilities that were hosting parties.
Well, we didn't have that.
I don't trust the government willing to do such a thing, nor do I have faith they won't ever again.
That's brutal.
I think that's a learned response. So COVID hysteria, COVID response, one and two. Anti-business.
We can relate.
Either they don't consult restaurant owners before shutdowns and vax mandates, or simply don't care how they affect them. The vaccine mandate alienated 30% of the 10 million people in L.A. County that are unvaxxed as customers. Vaccine mandates. I'm vaccinated, but something doesn't sit well with me about showing my vaccine card for a cup of coffee. It also leaves me wondering what's next. Yeah, you don't want to know. A quality of life. LA's left libertarian approach of letting people rot on the streets has destroyed the city and left tents, trash, human feces, and heroin needles everywhere. The vast majority of city sidewalks should be walkable, but many are not. Right, and actually that was an issue that was brought up in the Virginia governor's race too. That was an issue that's been brought up. That was brought up in the recall of Gavin Newsom. That was, even though obviously it failed. I was in Santa Monica a year ago, Labor Day week, and it was gross. I was in San Francisco earlier that same week, and it was not only desolate, but it was disgusting.
I saw a guy dropping a deuce and then another guy shaving. It was gross last time I was in San Francisco. Disgusting.
Number
but it's
six.
Happening here, too, just so you know. And if anybody wants to get a front row view of it, just drive north on Lakeshore Drive from Irving Park to Hollywood, and you'll see them all on the left-hand side. And then go to any of those viaducts to get to the lakefront, and it's disgusting. And then they set up porta-potties, and some people are using them, some people still aren't. So we are becoming L.A., I'm telling you.
The same thing on Lower Wacker.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing on
the Dan Ryan in 75th.
Same thing on, you know, in my neighborhood on Illinois, going east towards Navy Pier.
Everywhere.
I mean, it's pockets everywhere. And here's the thing about that, too. You know, because when you raise the issue, it's, how dare you? You don't care about the downtrodden. No, actually, I do. Uh-huh. It's interestingly, it's you who don't by supporting the current power structure, isn't it? Whether it's in L.A. or Chicago. It's you who doesn't care. You know why that is? Is because I understand that homelessness is primarily a mental health issue. So it's a failure of government response to those who have mental health issues and need medical treatment for their mental health issues, isn't it? And I don't understand, because what I understand from you, Mercedes Marxist, and those people that you've helped to elect, is that your focus is the downtrodden. Your focus is on the marginalized. Well, if that's true, how can these neighborhoods be overrun by people who have mental health issues and nowhere to go?
I mean, think in Chicago, Mayor Lightfoot just passed a budget which allocates $220 million to the homeless problem in Chicago. What exactly are you going to do with that money? Because people, and I volunteered, and
nobody
I know you
cares.
Did at Catholic nobody. Charities for a year on Tuesday, and I talked to these homeless people. And they don't want to live. You could give them a place and pay for their utilities and rent for 3 months. They don't want. They want the freedom of being outdoors. And
well, that's
just
some of them.
Right, some of them.
It doesn't matter. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of press release politics. We launched a program, which is mainly for the benefit of those people we hire to administer the program, the bureaucracy that serves itself. We have this program. Here, I'll send you the press release. We're allocating $220 million to fight homelessness. Okay. Well, yeah, wipe our hands. We're done with that problem.
Okay, next.
That's how we think about it, don't we?
Press release politics.
Taxes, homelessness. But here's some other cultural issues that I thought were interesting. Friendliness.
Oh.
Self-obsession is the norm here. The people of Austin are incredibly kind and wear the expression of hello instead of get away from me, peasant. don't ever expect a stranger to stop and help you if you're broken down on the side of the road in L.A.
They never will.
Judgment. People, he's talking about L.A., people here are everything they claim to be against, intolerant and condemnatory. They withhold their true thoughts so long as you agree with them ideologically. If you're overweight, expect to be soft-spoken to like you're mentally handicapped.
Oh my
general
goodness.
Mood. I mean, these are, you know, 20 reasons why he's leaving LA for California. I mean, to me, these reasons he's talking about are more relevant to me than, you know, than the tax burden, for example, although property taxes, that's another matter. But you know, the income taxes, this is more important to me. And it's more reflective of the sort of life you're going to lead, because this just radiates throughout the culture. General mood, he writes. Everyone is overly riddled with anxiety, whereas the people of Austin are more laid back, easygoing. Driving is where it's most noticeable. LA drivers have become increasingly aggressive. I won't speculate on cost because it seems to be a function of COVID. Forbidden topics. How dare you bring up homelessness or COVID restrictions? Anything critical of the ruling party here isn't up for discussion and is grounds for social banishment. If you're curious as to how quickly you can be labeled a Trump supporter, denounce masks. Traffic. I mean, you know, L.A. is notoriously bad traffic in Illinois. High rent.
Yeah.
Here's another one. This is these like judgment, mood, the disposition. I love these. Refusal to recognize needed change. The failure to recall Newsom couldn't have made this one any clearer. L.A. residents may either have selective amnesia regarding the 15 months of restrictions, or it isn't enough to convince them to vote differently. If so, what is? Right. Look at the approval numbers of even Lightfoot, but Pritzker. I'd be interested to look at the Biden's approval numbers in Chicago. And Chicagoland include all of those champagne socialist suburbs I talk about routinely. The refusal to recognize needed change. This isn't going to change. What is the point? Anti-Americanism. I was the only person in Santa Monica Beach wearing an American flag, wearing American flag apparel on July 4th.
Oh my God.
Lots of American flags in Orange County, but none here. You're a racist with one on your car or balcony. Elitism. Texas Democrats don't carry the same arrogance that LA Dems do, presumably because they don't have the luxury of hating Republicans. People hold their noses high here with regards to politics, LA, which is ironic. Parts of the city are indistinguishable from Kabul. Would the west and south sides of Chicago fit that description? Hypocrisy. The people here speak against racial injustice while their Hispanic servants drive 2 hours into the city from Riverside or North Orange County to garden their lawns and rake their leaves for minimum wage. The worst part is they don't see their own hypocrisy. Conformity. L.A., a city once synonymous with individualism and free thought, is now a pocket of strict, blind adherence along political party lines. I suppose when you get enough people together, many will find accidental uniformity in an attempt to be unique. See, to me, of the 20 reasons that he gives, conformity, the elitism, anti-Americanism, refusal to recognize needed change, forbidden topics, general mood, judgment, friendliness, those to me are the half a dozen reasons that I think are universal when it comes to cities dominated by these Democrat socialists, which is just about every major city in America. 312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro, answer line. Mike in Antioch.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Love your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm a manager of a large moving company here in Chicago, and we are inundated with the amount of moves going to Florida. It's to the point where the warehouses in Florida are full, and we're actually having to keep people's furniture here in Chicago.
Really? Well, you know, the interesting thing, right, is always that those U-Haul prices of, you know, the price going from Chicago to Dallas versus going from Dallas to Chicago where or you know, whatever, Southwest Florida to Chicago versus Chicago to Southwest Florida, where it is, you know, one-fourth, one-fifth of the price to go from a place in Texas or a place in Florida to Chicago as compared to Chicago to Florida and Texas. And I assume that's similar with your moving company.
It is. It's Fort Myers, Sarasota, Naples. It's Chicago. The wealth of Chicago is leaving Chicago and going to Florida. And it's your champagne socialists that, you know, want to pretend like they care about all this, but they're leaving. And they have the means to do it. So we're moving the wealth out of Chicago, and it's been happening for well over a year now. And that trend is not going to stop. You know, Florida is the biggest outbound state for us in Illinois, then the Carolinas and Texas. And we don't see that stopping. So great for me as a major moving company.
Yeah.
But that the problem with that is that keeps me here in Illinois. So, my work and business is here now, but I'm moving everybody out.
You need to be a stowaway on one of those moving trucks. Thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it. You know, it's interesting because I've looked at this with Florida specifically. Just on a gross numbers basis, Illinois is only sixth or seventh in terms of the number of residents leaving for Florida. You know, places like New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania are higher. On a per capita basis, that changes a little bit. But it also speaks to, you know, what those big, deep blue states are going to look like in a generation or two with all the wealth out. You know, Even if you maintain a residence there in Chicago because you can, these champagne socialists that Mike was speaking about, you know, you're plotting your future elsewhere, and thus, really, by implication, the future of future generations in your family. We know, again, to repeat, Illinois competing with New Jersey for most college-bound high school seniors going to school out of state. So they're plotting their future out of state, too. So the wealth drain and the brain drain. And you think it's going to get better? You think that's so easily reversible? Scott in Hanover Park.
Not in Hanover Park anymore. Good morning, Dan and Amy. I am one of those people that's actually relocating as we speak. I've been driving all night with Lou Malnati's pizza in the trunk, headed to my new house in Florida. And you guys are welcome to do your show from the lanai. But I got kicked out of work after 32 years. They're changing benefits if I stayed. So I'm out. And what I see is a city and state that is deliberately bankrupt, and they have no interest in changing it. So as the gentleman before who from the moving company says, as the wealth leaves, there's nobody left to pay the bills. So what are they going to do?
Raise their taxes.
I don't know. Raise your taxes, but nobody's there to pay it. Look at the south side of Chicago and those south suburbs where the housing value may be what it is, but they're taxing people who don't even have that income. So they're in a no-win scenario, and they're doing it deliberately, and they don't want to change. And that's the scary part.
Exactly. Exactly. Thanks for the call, Scott. Congratulations. Enjoy sunny Florida.
Yeah.
Barb in Northwest Indiana.
Hi, Bart. Hi, Dan and Amy. Yeah, I wanted to comment on when you guys were talking about the moves from one state to another. I anticipated moving from Illinois to Northwest Indiana for a long time, and I finally did it this year. I built a house, so it took a little while during COVID. And when I moved here, I was just so shocked at the mood of people, how much more pleasant they were. It wasn't what I was moving for, but it was just such a nice feeling. I lived in Oaklawn for many years, and just the stress of this driving, people are rude and ignorant, and here it's just, you just don't feel that. And I know it's new still, but it was just such a nice feeling.
Thanks for the call, Barb. That's huge. You know, I experienced it in Naples. The way I describe it, everything in Chicago is a hassle.
Yep.
And everything in Naples and Southwest Florida is easy and pleasant. And you don't really appreciate how much that improves your quality of life until you experience it. It's one thing to say. It's another thing to experience, like Barb is talking about. Totally get it. That is totally a thing. Orlando on the north side.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the gentleman that was moving people from Chicago to Florida. I'm one of those that defected. I actually haven't defected just yet, but I moved my entire family. We're renting a townhome out there on the outside of Orlando. I couldn't take it anymore with the rising taxes. I just sold my house. I owned two other condos. I sold that one in Lincoln Park. I got one more in the South Loop that I'm trying to sell, but with all the chaos going over there, it's a little bit more difficult. I had to move in with my mother. You know, she's still here in Bucktown, and it's just I just can't take it anymore. And I still got to work in here another year and a half before I could retire. But me and my wife were making things work out. I'm flying back and forth just can't take the taxes here anymore. They're just eating me alive with two kids in college. Can't do it.
Orlando from the north side to Orlando. Thanks for the call, Orlando. Appreciate it. Great story. Another anecdote. And what does the political ruling class say and their champagne socialist benefactors? Let them eat cake. That's mm-hmm. what they say. Okay. See ya. Mike in Littleton, Colorado.
Yeah, I have a second home in Florida. I bought a few years back. It's my primary residence. And listening to your list, which jumped out at me that guy from L.A. is a Democrat moving to Austin. Mm. And he's probably dragging his same craziness with him there. And listening to, you know, the story of your mover and lots of people going from Illinois to Florida, maybe it's time for me to put the for sale sign up and take advantage of the profits and leave, because those people from Illinois will drag the same garbage that destroyed their state to where they're going now. So that, I forget where it was on the list, Dan, but the inability to change or the conformity.
Right.
That's the enemy. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Joe in Naples.
Hello.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. I moved my family, wife, two kids, to Naples, Florida 10 years ago. I knew I needed to get out of here. What does she wind up doing? She finds another guy down there. So, Mike, I want to tell everyone, be careful what you wish for.
All right. Thanks. Sorry about that, Joe.
The show took a strange turn.
So, sorry about that, Joe. He was right to leave 10 years ago, but I'm sorry it didn't work out.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Cause they got the beat, the campus beat, the campus beat. Yeah!
Yeah, and before we get to Campus Beat, which focuses on K through 12 campuses on this installment, Annie and Bartlett, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to comment. You had mentioned earlier that Illinois is one of the top states for outbound college students.
Yeah.
That's my rule. I have a daughter who is a senior. We're looking at colleges. We're looking at many colleges. There's actually two rules, one, none in Illinois, and the vaccine mandate for all colleges actually solidified that. There's no argument on that anymore. Also, no blue states. We're only looking at colleges in red states.
Because mom and dad are going to follow daughter at some point?
Daughter and son when he graduates. We have a few more. Yes.
My son won't even look at colleges in California because he doesn't like the people there. I'm like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah, no, and it's also looking at where the what colleges are mandating the vaccine, and it's kind of a strategic. It's not just have fun, go look at colleges. You have to be very strategic about it.
Thanks for the
call.
Well,
that's why there's such a surge in University of Iowa. No vaccine mandates, no mask mandates. Professors have to teach in person courses.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Back to normal. Same with
What are you going to do? Send your kid to Northwestern so they can run on the football field and protest the police, so they can listen to Nicole Hannah Jones deliver the keynote address for Martin Luther King Day?
Yeah, I mean,
speaking of which, Nicole Hannah Jones, Pulitzer Prize winner, 1619 Project.
Yeah, I'm
racism.
With her work.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, critical race theory isn't being taught in schools. Fine, okay. Racism and leftism is that better? That's what I would say in response to the next person you run into says, oh, critical race theory, that's for law. You know, they repeat the talking point of the critical race theorists. It's in law schools, esoteric, not taught in schools. Okay, fine. Just racism, straight racism and straight leftism. That's what's being taught in K through 12 schools. Is that better? And we'll just keep continue feeding you examples that they can pretend don't exist. Oak Park Elementary School District 97, in response to a FOIA, District 97 indicated it is teaching the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah Jones, the real founding of the country, 1619, when the first slave landed in America, not 1776. The holds the American Revolution was fought to preserve slavery, false, and that America is well today is the direct result of slavery. The 1619 Project is a endeavor that seeks to recast the story of American history alongside the issue of race. It certainly does. The District 97 question. There are individuals who, one of the questions associated with this curriculum, there are individuals who believe there's just no such thing as the color line. They will say, I just see people, I don't see color. Think of a moment where this idea is challenged in the podcast episode that's part of the curriculum and explain how it's challenged. Finally, answer where you stand on the idea of not seeing color. That's such a false construct, which is how flimsy and fraudulent this curriculum is. Yes, I see color. I see a black person and I note they're black. That's not what people mean when they're saying I don't see color. They obviously see color, nitwits.
Right.
What they're saying is I judge people based on their behavior, not their color. And this is like a revolutionary concept. It's incredible that that's not obvious to wide swaths of the population and almost the entire government school system, K through 12 and post-secondary. And they're, you know, so this goes to Oak Park School District 97. I'm sure that surprises very few people. How about Lyons Township High School? Teachers are participating. The teachers, you got to, you know, indoctrinate the indoctrinators so they can indoctrinate the kids. Okay. Teachers at Lyons Township High School participated in a book study organized by a Black Lives Matter group. Teaching for Black Lives is the name of the group. The group will train Lyons Township teachers on how to better incorporate the truth about the breathtaking heroism of Black communities in the face of injustice. That's no problem. And how they can replace Eurocentric textbooks with a curriculum that centers on the intersectional identities of Black people. That's a problem. You see the distinction there? Mm-hmm. We want to tell stories about American history, about injustices, about people who overcame injustices, hold up people who are heroes, make kids read Frederick Douglass, teach them about the Black Wall Street Massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, obviously about the Civil Rights Movement, obviously about Jim Crow, obviously about slavery and the slave trade, not just in the United as it pertains to the United States, but the world over. More lies told by these racists who are teaching racism and teaching leftism in the schools. That's what they're doing. Jennifer Rowe is the Lyons Township's Director of Equity and Belonging.
Oh, God.
All of these DIE instructors, these administrators that have overrun college campuses, in some places like Yale, you have as many administrators as you have undergrads. All that strata of edgeocracy is now at the K through 12 level. So proud of our amazing educators. Love how they are all in with this indoctrination seminar, this race hustle, said the director of equity and belonging, Jennifer Rowe, at Lyons Township High School. Anybody bring up this position at a Lyons Township school board meeting recently? Does anybody know this position exists? Has anybody interacted with this Jennifer Rowe? Is anybody paying attention to what's going on at LT? This group, which was created by the Zinn Education Project, Mr. Howard Zinn, People's History of the United States, which is straight up Marxist coloring of American history. Okay. Among the lessons in the lesson plans include teaching students to take on the role of activist experts, to design a slavery reparations bill for Congress, and also to discuss the Kaepernick effect, taking a knee and changing the world. Colin Kaepernick is a hero.
He's not a hero.
By the way, this Jennifer Rowe at LT, the Equity and Belonging Director, she previously was the Executive Director of Educational Equity at Indian Prairie School District 204 in Naperville. Before that, she was the Dean of Students at Matea Valley High School in Aurora, a teacher at Waubonsie Valley High School in Aurora, a teacher at Loyola Academy Catholic School in Wilmette. You know what her salary is at LT to be the Director of Equity and Belonging?
Oh, is it six figures?
You bet it is.
Oh, my gosh.
$155,000.
What? Well, what are her job responsibilities? I mean, what does she do all day?
She cheerleads the race indoctrinators that come in to work over the teachers who then turn and work over the students. That's what she does. It's taxing work. Of course it is. One more, and I'll take some of your calls. Woodlands Academy. Woodlands Academy in Leafy Lake Forest. You're familiar with it. Woodlands Academy. It's a Catholic girls' school. Here we go again. Another Catholic school. Another one bites the dust. Where's the queen bed when you need it? I mean, the music bed. Woodlands Academy, which is, again, founded by the Society of the Sacred Heart, run by the Arch of Chicago. Here's a lesson that somebody sent me, an exercise for the girls at Woodlands Academy, elite Catholic school. Tell me a story about a time when a stereotype was especially painful to you, and they have this last, like, fill-in-the-blank lesson. Mm-hmm. I am this, but I'm not that. And say, for example, if one of the identifiers was white, this is the example in the lesson. One of the white the stereotype would be radical right Republican. So think of a stereotype associated with you. You say, like, for example, I'm white, but I'm not a radical right Republican. Is that a stereotype that exists except among the ignorant, or is this a stereotype that they're trying to perpetuate at Woodlands Academy? And is that the right way to teach about, you know, ignorant associations, the ignorant labeling of people? Is that the way to do it? You know, it's a way to say I'm white, but I'm not one of them. So I don't want to be a radical right Republican, because that's what being white means, is that you're a radical right Republican. Radical right Republican, too. Not Republican.
Republican or right.
Radical. Radical okay. Right. That's the way they're doing it at Woodlands Academy. I mean, it's not very clever. It's actually rather straightforward. But that they would, of course, offer the argument that I was offering in, that I was responding to in terms of this lesson. So that's what's going on. Catholic schools, the elitist of elite Catholic schools in Chicagoland, as well as obviously as the government school systems throughout the suburbs. Forget the city, throughout the suburbs. So, you know, not putting Illinois colleges on your list. It's getting pretty close to the time where you can't put any Illinois schools on your list in terms of educating kids. You're going to have to ship them over to, I don't know, because, I mean, I was going to say East Coast prep schools, but yeah, right. Maybe some, I don't know, established residency in some other in neighboring states and see if you can get into the government school system there, or you got to ship them to St. John's Military Academy or something. But it's not happening. Teaching racism and leftism in schools. It's not happening. Okay. Margo in Burr Ridge.
Yeah, I just wanted to let any of your listeners in Hinsdale know what their property tax increase that we voted on 2 years went to. So I went on the District 86, which is a high school. I went on their website and I Googled Panorama Education, and sure enough, it pops up. So that's what they're spending the money on that we voted for 2 years ago. And just to make sure the parents don't find out, if you work at the school, I have a friend that works at the school at the Hinsdale Central High School, and she was told if they caught her taking any of the material out of the school or photographing it with her phone, she'd be fired immediately. Wow. So they know the parents don't want it. They're active trying to hide it. And that's
thanks for the call, Margo. And then what happens when you spend all your time indoctrinating kids and obsessing about panoply of identitarian the identitarian positions? You got to get rid of the grading system because they're not learning anything. They don't have the ability to read or do math.
And nobody can critically fail. Think. So they're taking D's and F's at certain places.
Yeah, that's what they're doing in L.A., ditching the old way of grading because there's too many D's and F's, particularly among marginalized student groups. So we just get rid of them. I mean, at my alma mater, Bennett Academy, before talking about all this gay business of the lacrosse coach and her significant other, it was lowering the standards for A's, B's, C's, and so forth at Bennett, private Catholic school, one of the wealthy families, significant, most families there are doing well, high test scores to the extent that those are even taken anymore. I don't know. Those are probably on the way out. And they're dumbing down the standards too. Okay. Rich in LaGrange Park.
How are you, Dan? Amy? I actually work at Lyons Township High School, and to sit in a meeting with her is worse than what you're actually saying. I mean, other people just, their mouths drop open when some of the stuff that she says.
And Jennifer Rowe, your equity and belonging director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, she starts with every meeting with thanking whatever, and which is fine. Native American tribe that we stole the land from. that's what she says about wherever she's at. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't know the history of the Native American tribes either.
That's great. Thanks for the call, Rich.
Yeah.
$155,000 a year. I don't know. So there's somebody who will game the system with racial politics and then live fat off the land at 55 with a net present value, $6 million pension, $5 million pension. That's what you love. That's what we love in Illinois. Michael on the South Side.
Hi. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
I'll be honest with you. The one aspect about the whole debate over critical race theory amazes me. Why isn't there a similar push to teach labor history in the United States, which would detail the history about how many Americans, including many white Americans, were deeply affected by the by unjust conditions here in the United States?
Yeah, right. Sure. It's fine. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, why not teach the history of the United States? The actual history. There's a thought. The actual history of the United States, warts and all. Yeah. And have intelligent discussions about it rather than obsessing about your identity, your intersectional score, these navel-gazing exercises about how I'm stereotyped. How about teaching kids to be adults? Think, discuss, debate with teachers and students alike. No. Sit back and let us, you know, imprint our political agenda into your gray matter. Brian in Oak Forest.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday, guys. District 146 in Oak Forest, Orland Park and Tinley Park. They've had several communications with Illinois Reading Council, and they got posters hanging in the walls related to the We the Future campaign that I was told were going to come down 2 or 3 months ago, but they don't. So I simply suggest that parents, grandparents, whatever, FOIA their districts about the Illinois Reading Council and We the Future campaign and see what type of racist rhetoric they're putting out there. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The left promotes the idea of a vast right-wing conspiracy dating back to Hillary Clinton, actually dating back about 30 years prior to that, which we'll get to with our next guest. And yet, they are the paranoids. Let me give you an example. Go back to this clip that we played at the outset of the show talking about the Rittenhouse case. This from Chris Hayes, Rachel Maddow impersonator on MSNBC, which is just textbook leftism. Textbook leftism. Chris Hayes on Kyle Rittenhouse.
He heard warnings about the boogeymen of Black Lives Matter and Antifa.
Antifa.
And he took this illegally acquired assault weapon, which he admits, not for hunting or for home defense. And he throws himself at the fray in Kenosha. And he kills two people. The boy who killed people, the boy who killed people, is then celebrated by the same pro-gun law and order culture that produced him as a hero and a martyr. And he's bailed out with the help of right-wing activists, and he poses for a photo grinning in the T-shirt of a long gun-themed coffee company that then courted controversy from the right when it distanced itself from this person, this boy who'd killed two people accused of homicide. There's a legal question before the jury right now of Kyle Rittenhouse's guilt or innocence. It's being determined. It will be determined. From what I've seen, I think it's pretty likely he'll be acquitted, honestly. But there's also the broader question of what kind of society we want to live in. Ask yourself that. If you're watching this and you're a gun owner or someone who considers yourself a defender of the Second Amendment, abstractly, right? Ask yourself, do we want a society in which political conflict is settled on the streets between people with guns? One in which everyone is armed and can therefore view the other people armed as a plausible threat, which appears to what happened on the streets of Kenosha. Is that the society we want? Because that's the outcome the pro-gun lobby is hoping to bring about, is bringing about. Go ask the families of those two dead men. And they're doing it through lots of channels, including through an upcoming Supreme Court ruling, which the conservative majority could very feasibly broaden its interpretation of the Second Amendment to one that essentially requires all states to permit adult Americans to carry a concealed weapon basically all the time for whatever purpose they want. It's not just a theoretical argument. It is happening now. It happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and in the chamber the highest court in the land.
So there's four parts to the argument that Chris Hayes makes, this theory that he offers. One is ignore the precipitating event. Ignore the precipitating event perpetrated by your detestable allies, the BLMs and the Antifas of the world, which is the sacking of Kenosha, burning down a city. Ignore that. Then pretend those same detestable allies are boogeymen created by your enemies. They don't really exist. Then treat the main thing in this story as trivial. He admits he thinks Rittenhouse is going to be acquitted, which is the same thing as saying the state didn't make its case. That's trivial. Then turn enemies, your enemies, law-abiding Second Amendment types, gun owners, into the boogeyman for your detestable allies. Isn't that nicely done on his part and nicely analyzed by me? I think so. For more on the topic of paranoia in American politics, we're pleased to be joined by Eric Felton. He's an investigative correspondent for RealClearInvestigations.com, reporting on government corruption. He's a former columnist for The Wall Street Journal and previously a Kennedy Fellow at Harvard University. Eric, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, how are you doing?
Good. What about, you know, you wrote this most excellent piece on paranoid, the paranoia in American politics, and you date it back to this essay from Eberstadt in 1964. But what about the left, you know, maybe Hillary Clinton, the most accessible example, claiming a vast right-wing conspiracy, suggesting paranoia on the right, when in point of fact, their leading intellectual lights are people like Chris Hayes, who are promoting paranoia in the clever way he attempted to do here on the Rittenhouse matter.
Well, the essay that I'm writing about in my article at Real Clear Investigations is titled "The Paranoid Style of American Politics." But the historian who wrote the essay, Richard Hofstadter, he really, what he meant was the paranoid style of conservative or right-wing America, not just the paranoid style of American politics. And it was written at the heyday of the Cold War, and Hofstadter was trying to say that basically when it came to anti-communism, that conservatives were sort of just prone to kooky conspiracy theories. And he would talk about how they were always talking about a vast conspiracy of one sort or another. And what I point out in the article is that if you talk about vast conspiracies these days, it isn't the right that's talking about vast conspiracies. It's explicitly Hillary Clinton, who's been using for years now the very language of Hofstadter's essay to indicate a sort of paranoid obsession with which is this notion of seeing vast conspiracies where there are none.
Russia collusion is a threat to our democracy. Rioters who desecrated the Capitol on 1/6 are a threat to our democracy. And even when the FBI comes out and says there was no, you know, conspiracy, that it doesn't matter, the argument or the line of propaganda persists.
That's right. And you know, when you start getting in the conspiratorial rabbit hole, you just think how wacky the conspiracy that was being peddled by Christopher Steele, who is, of course, the former British spy who worked for Fusion GPS, which was being paid by Perkins Coie, the law firm for the Democratic National Committee and for the Clinton campaign in 2016. That's what actually looks like a conspiracy. And yet it's the Clinton campaign that is thinking in terms of these vast conspiracies of Donald Trump being involved for 5 or 8 years in a conspiracy with the Russian government to get him elected. You know, one of the things about conspiracy thinking, it isn't plausible in the way that if you think about it, what are the chances that Donald Trump and all his followers could keep secret an 8-year conspiracy to worked up with the Russian government to use Russian assets to take over the United States government effectively. It's preposterous on its face, and yet we've spent years going over this preposterous claim basically because it's now the left which is prone to conspiratorial thinking. The bigger the conspiracy, the more likely they are to believe it, as opposed to what sort of sensible people do, which is if there's a big conspiracy proposed, you know, pull up the threads and watch how fast the conspiracy comes apart.
Well, I mean, you know, and not to be conspiratorial, but even dating back to Hofstadter in the 60s, it seems, because we've seen this play out a couple of times now and on a couple of different matters, it seems almost purposeful that the play is to project a conspiracy on your political opponents, project conspiracies on conservatives as a means to misdirect attention away from an actual conspiratorial effort underway by the left, as in the case of Hillary Clinton's disinformation campaign on Trump while she and her campaign and with the help of, you know, seemingly some at the FBI were actually had this initiative afoot.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the genius of the Clinton campaign's reaction to losing the election was to propose to basically conspire to convince people that there was a big conspiracy going on. But if there was any conspiracy going on, it was a conspiracy to ruin the reputation of Donald Trump, to ruin his presidency, and to cast doubt upon the legitimacy of his election. And that effort ended up roping in various Russians. And so if you wanted to say that the 2016 election was tainted in any way by Russian actions, it looks as though the Russian actions were ones being done in conjunction with the Hillary campaign.
Well, and then the problem, I mean, among the many problems with this is, you know, if, for anybody who's read Shakespeare, is that paranoia, you know, that may have some legitimate basis on either side, but if it becomes sort of central to your way of thinking about politics, it can have disastrous consequences because you can't think there's a conspiracy behind everything, even when there isn't.
Right, and that's where you have to kind of, on the one hand, you know, the old joke goes, what do you call somebody who is paranoid? Perceptive. You know, just because you think people are out to get you doesn't mean they aren't. And, you know, especially if you're in politics. So the question is, how do you untangle the real conspiracies from imagined conspiracies? And, you know, that's the difference between delusional paranoia and perceptive paranoia, if you will. And, you know, one of the things we have to do in politics is try to test the claims that are made by partisans of either party. And what didn't happen was that when the dossier was brought forward, you didn't have the FBI using common sense in taking a look at the dossier and right from the get-go saying, you know, this is preposterous. and you didn't see the media after the dossier had been published. You didn't see the media, you know, looking at the dossier and saying, you know, actually read it. And in, when you read it, you will see that it's preposterous. So one of the challenges in any kind of facing any kind of conspiracy claim is, you know, to see whether to give it credit or not. But it's usually a pretty easy thing to determine in this sense, which is, does the conspiracy make sense, and is the conspiracy simple? Which is, if you have two people who are conspiring to do something, it's hard maybe to you know, break open that conspiracy. But if you have 20 people, 50 people, 1,000 people who are supposedly involved in a conspiracy, you know, that conspiracy isn't going to remain secret very long. And, you know, one of the things about the Steele dossier is it was basically making claims that there were, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people involved in this conspiracy with Donald Trump. And it just, you know, doesn't bear being considered that such a vast conspiracy would not come to be exposed pretty quickly. And yeah, that's why to talk about vast conspiracies is always to be, you know, on the kooky side of the conspiracy question.
Right. Oxymoron. Eric Felton, investigative correspondent for RealClearInvestigations.com, reporting on government corruption. Eric, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Since inflation is so much in the news, it raises one of my constant laments that people who cover these topics don't know the first thing about what they're covering. I mean, can you have somebody cover these topics that at least could pass an Econ 101 course or at some point in their lives did, so you can get away from these absurd, embarrassing, imbecilic conversations like the one that Chuck Todd had with NBC business reporter Stephanie Ruhle? I mean,
how is she even a business reporter?
Not even the basics.
We've got the wage gains. Increases prices, that eats back into the wage gains. What stops this circular sort of spiraling upwards of inflation? What puts a halt to it?
Well, listen, Michael is not wrong. This is not inflation in isolation. It is 100% connected to COVID. And we should remind our audience, and frankly, the administration should as well, they knew it was going to be a complicated and bumpy economic recovery. That's why we have expanded child tax credit, right? You've got families of 60 million children in this country getting on average of $460 a month because of that. You're worried about people who are on fixed incomes. All of us are. But come next year, that inflation adjustment is going to be up 5.9%. So they've made those adjustments. They knew this was going to be rocky, but the question, well, when are prices going to go back down? Here's the dirty little secret. Why will they? There's a record amount of household savings in this country, and we might not like these high prices, but we're lining up to pay it. We've got booming consumer demand. We have booming consumer spending. You're right. You can't get a new dishwasher. One of the reasons, because an enormous amount of people are renovating their kitchens because they've saved so much in the last year.
The dirty little secret, it's not much of a secret, is that you're a moron, Stephanie Ruhle. If you produce less, sooner or later, you have to consume less. Strictly looking at the consumer side is Ruhle, and then suggesting that more funny money is the way they were, is that the way we're, this is being addressed, and that's an appropriate way to address it. They knew this was going to be a bumpy ride. Is that why they suggested that inflation would be transitory and continue to this very moment, trying to spend trillions more in funny money? I mean, even if consumption is currently high, at some point it will fall relative to expectations and production. That's just basic, and I mean basic, economics. And so you can understand why so many people are misinformed and don't appreciate what's happening, other than sort of what they're experiencing in terms of their purchasing power at the pump or at the grocery store, is because you have dum-dums. And I just cannot stress this enough, because it is so reckless and frustrating that so many people in positions of information sharing haven't the first clue about the information they're sharing. In stark contrast to that, we're pleased to be joined now by Thomas Vartanian. He's the executive director of the Financial Technology and Cybersecurity Center and author of 200 Years of American Financial Panics, Crashes, Recessions, Depressions, and the Technology That Will Change It All. Professor Vartanian, thanks for joining us again. Pleased to have you.
Thanks, Dan and Amy. I'm pleased to be back.
Well, I know I want to get to some of these, metaverse and cryptocurrency issues. But first, just on the matter of inflation, so that there's some additional voice of sanity on the topic. What is your handle on where we're at and where this is going in the context of the fiscal and monetary policies emanating from Congress and the Fed, respectively?
Well, that's a great question, Dan, and it's sort of the focus of my book. You know, I served in the government during the savings and loan crisis, and many people won't remember the landscape there, but inflation hit about 15%. Interest rates, long-term interest rates hit 21%, and I can remember meetings with Paul Volcker, and we were trying to figure out what to do. And Paul's response at that point, and the only tools he had, was to begin to raise interest rates. And it was at that point, I think, that the government and the Fed figured out that they could manage the economy in ways that they had never done before. And it's only increased as crisis after crisis has increased. So what's happened now? In the last two crises, 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2020, the government has flooded the economy with money. And there's only so long you can flood the economy with money, with overspending by the government. We now have a $30 trillion debt. With the Federal Reserve Board buying assets, it now has a balance sheet asset total of $8 trillion. Before 2007, it was $800 billion. So it's now $8 trillion. And this is the most startling factor, I think. 56% of the treasuries that have been issued in the last year have been purchased not by the public, but by the Federal Reserve Board. So, in effect, we've got this manufactured economy that at some point has to sort of sling out of control. And I've been writing about that for several years, just basically because of the amount of money that's been forced into the economy and the number of bad policy decisions that have accompanied it.
Right. And this idea that I'm all for, looking at the economy through the eyes of the consumer, but that necessarily includes productive capacity. And this is just being sort of looked past. We have, people making sort of generic references to a supply chain challenge that we have right now that we're working on, and pretending that you can have consumption without production almost, which is what you more or less heard from Rule.
Yeah, and this is, you put your finger on the problem. It is a highly complex set of factors that go into what makes up the economy, what makes up markets, and how they interrelate between each other and drive each other. And the problem is we tend to, from a political point of view or from a cable TV or internet point of view, we tend to dumb it down to its simplest concepts and make political decisions that have nothing to do with economic reality. And that's where we are right now. And that's why I'm pretty pessimistic about us digging our way out of this when every response is political. And You know, I don't know where we're going to find the leadership to try to fix that.
Well, how much is the supply chain issue factored into inflation?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I think the supply chain, you know, the supply chain issue is one, again, that is driven by many factors, as Don has suggested. And I think COVID has something to do with it. But to the extent that we're not producing any goods anymore or getting those goods to their ultimate end users, the price has to go up. Look what's happened to housing in the last 24 months. The median price of housing in America, and this is sort of the ultimate supply chain problem, the median price of housing has increased 25% in 1 year. 25%. I mean, you can't keep having those kinds of shortages and demand and end up with an economy that does not sort of spiral into an inflationary environment.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get to this other topic because of the big splashy announcement Mark Zuckerberg made with the renaming of Facebook, the Meta, because he wants to focus on people's attention on the metaverse, which is his focus. And you in a piece that you wrote for The Hill, express some concerns about the forthcoming metaverse and the associated technology. Could you elucidate those concerns?
Yeah, sure, Dan. You know, look, I mean, I don't think there's anybody out there who understands that we are slowly but surely moving ourselves into a virtual world, and that virtual world is highly insecure. And I've come to the conclusion, having worked with companies for 30 years, putting them into cyberspace, building online presence, that we have put ourselves in a very difficult situation. And Mr. Zuckerberg's oft-quoted mantra, move fast and break things, is now, in hindsight, extremely dangerous strategy. Because what's happened is we've sort of run ourselves into a virtual world that has no rules, right? Who is it out there who invites somebody into their house and says, look, just rifle through all my drawers and all my personal materials. You find anything, just take it. Well, that doesn't happen in the real world, in the analog world, but it sure happens in cyberspace. And unfortunately, too many people actually invite strangers into their virtual world to take whatever they want. And so here's the bottom line, and the question I would ask every viewer out there, and that is, if we can't secure the virtual world we already have created, and we can't, it is insecure. If we can't secure that world, we shouldn't be moving haphazardly to the next virtual world, the metaverse, where we're going to tie together all these virtual realities in one big marketplace where technologists can take advantage of consumers and take information. And the consumers are left holding the bag with literally no security, as businesses are too, literally no security in these virtual worlds to protect them. And here's the bottom line. The bottom line is we're creating vulnerabilities in the virtual worlds, whether it be the internet, the metaverse, or whatever. We're creating vulnerabilities twice as fast as we're creating solutions to those security and vulnerability problems. Why is that? The why is that is because we've allowed the marketplace to reward innovation and not punish insecurity. So if you're coding a new product, if you're creating software, if you're building new hardware, it's more important to get it to market quickly to get the innovators first place in line and sort of the premium on being there first and worry about security later. That is a huge mistake we've made. We should not have let anything come to market without standards of security.
What role does cryptocurrency play in enhancing the security in the virtual world, secure transactions specifically? And are we moving in the direction of cryptocurrency ultimately? I mean, maybe the timeline is imponderable at this point, but ultimately replacing, you know, fiat currency?
Yeah. So, you know, that's the question that's on everybody's minds this day as cryptocurrency becomes more and more popular in a sort of weird way, because it's not out there being used as money. Nobody's taking it to the supermarket and buying a loaf of bread with Bitcoin or Tether or anything else. And the question is, what is it doing? Well, having worked through about four financial crises in my lifetime, some of them as a regulator and some of them as a private attorney, I know that, you know, these kinds of things tend to be unsupervised and unregulated for some period of time until they get a critical mass. once they get a critical mass, and I think that's where we are at this point, the government steps in and says, well, wait a minute, let's look at this and see what it's doing. Well, what it's doing is you have a crypto asset with no intrinsic value. Put aside the stablecoin element of cryptocurrency. But in the normal cryptocurrency, you've got a crypto asset that has no intrinsic value, trading on whatever people would like it to be and whatever hype can be driven into that. You know, when you have something like that, there's a very small margin for error. And at some point, the air comes out of the balloon and things collapse. Why? There's no government behind it, and there's no central bank behind it. And so when that happens, the question is, has it gotten so big that it has an impact on national or global economics and begins to bring down economies because of a run on cryptocurrency? And that's where the regulators are today, trying to figure out that balance and whether they should step in and regulate. And the problem with all of this, and as a former regulator I know, when you're dealing with technology, you don't want to step in too fast and stop progress. On the other hand, if you wait too long to determine the impact on financial stability or consumers' lives, you may have waited too long.
So am I sensing that you think that at this point this is still tulip mania?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's the tulip scandal of the 17th century back here in the 20s. I mean, if you read about the tulip bulb scandal, it sounds eerily similar, right? And the question is, what's the intrinsic value that people are throwing their money at? Now, there is some value in what's been created, and it's not in the crypto world or the crypto asset, I believe. The intrinsic value that's there is in the new networks that are being created by blockchain and other applications that underlie these cryptocurrencies. And those create their own new set of problems, because in peer-to-peer networks such as blockchain, you have a peer-to-peer or person-to-person verification of every transaction. What does that mean? It means it takes trusted intermediaries out of the middle. And who are the trusted intermediaries today? Banks, financial companies, insurance companies, companies like that. They're pulled out of the system. So that's where I'm watching to see how these changes affect the marketplace. But you know, the more popular place to look is, of course, the crypto assets. And, you know, until somebody shows me where the intrinsic value in crypto is, I'm going to be skeptical.
He is Thomas Vartanian, Executive Director of the Financial Technology and Cybersecurity Center. The book, 200 Years of American Financial Panics, Crashes, Recessions, Depressions, and the Technology That Will Change It All. Professor Vartanian, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. I very much like being back here with you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic. Open mic Friday. Call in now. Open mic Friday.
It's that time, Dan and Amy. Good morning. Take in your calls with comments, criticisms, compliments, general crack pottery. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Get to as many as we can. Lines are jammed, so just keep trying as we move through callers. We'll start with you, Amy, I guess, on this Open Mic Friday.
Well, yeah, real quick. People don't know this, but we're having substitute teachers that aren't working today at CPS that are getting paid for no reason at all. Don't you think that that's a waste of money? Because they signed them up and then
CPS
they decided...
CPS and waste of money.
Yeah, then they decided after they said they could work that, no, because we're going to have a vaccination awareness day. It's stay healthy on the 12th today, if you know what I mean. So I just wanted to get that off my chest, and I'm going to go to their press conference today and find out how much money we're wasting today paying teachers who aren't working.
I can tell you how much money you're wasting in CPS.
Much?
What's the budget? $8 billion? Mm-hmm. You're wasting $8 billion.
Okay.
Let's start with the Rittenhouse trial. Brad in West Loop, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Happy belated, Amy.
Oh, thank you.
The over-under odds are for whether Kyle goes back out to save Kenosha after he's inevitably found innocent.
Thanks for calling. Right. He's acquitted and takes his sport rifle and goes right back to the streets. Maybe that would not be the best idea for Kyle.
No.
Maybe some other people need to step up, starting with the local elected officials who have authority over the police department, so the police doesn't stand down and set up a skirmish line that allows the city to be burned to the ground. Maybe a little preparation in advance of that verdict, knowing what you're dealing with these leftist barbarian hordes. Alyssa in Kenosha.
Hi, guys. I just want to say, first off, I was at Freedom Summit, had a great time.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, thanks for putting on such a great event. My comment is just, please, everyone, just please pray for Kenosha. This community, if you're unfamiliar, is just chock full of small businesses, blue-collar people, working people. They've been through so much this last year and a half, and it's just pretty remarkable, you know, that we might go through this again. And if I could just ask a favor of everyone,
sure.
Can you please flood the social media, flood emails, phones, for the not only the mayor of Kenosha, but the governor, to just make sure that there's a plan in place, that everyone's ready to go, and they just need to hear complaints on that, because we need assistance, and I don't have faith that the state's going to step up.
Hey, Alyssa, did that family furniture store, did they rebuild, and what about the auto dealership? Are they back in business?
Yeah, so the furniture store moved to Highway 50, if you're familiar with the area.
Yeah.
So they're like kind of more in that big box shopping district, which is great, so they're thriving. Some of these places, though, are still boarded up. I know, Amy, you said you've been to town recently, and still burnt down, still boarded up. So
it's amazing to me that it's been that long and nothing's been done.
Thanks for the call, Alyssa.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. We'll putting the word out there for you.
They better have a plan in place.
Can't be surprised this time. Eduardo at Midway.
Yeah, good morning. I'm glad to hear in the news update here that Mr. Mayor Adams is going to be firm on against Mr. Newsom's threats. Obviously, my favorite police chief in the 90s was Philip Klein. So I'm hoping a lot of these cities get somebody like that, because otherwise they're going to create autonomous zones and then just same crime is going to be business as usual.
Thanks for the call, Eduardo. Rich and Niles.
Yes, what I'm calling about, thank you, is I bought double E bonds in 1985. I cashed them in 2019. They matured in 2015. And the result of my buying these double E bonds 30 years ago was that my Social Security was going to charge me more for my benefits for Medicare by $1,000. And they sent me a letter stating that's what they were going to do. And the other thing I did was a mistake to put from my savings account buying two-year Treasury notes that paid 1.5%. That also increased my income. And that was a no-no as far as the socialist communist government we have. They want to make sure you don't get too much money to spend on your own, so they decided to take it away from me one way or the other.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Nancy in Northbrook.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Sorry. My comment is about government spending and how conservatives need to communicate about it. So we're all upset about the infrastructure bill. Every time we talk about it, it's billions and trillions. And I think what we conservatives need to do every time, including you guys, please, is we need to say there are this many households in the United States, or if we're talking about Illinois, there are this many taxpayers, so this $9 trillion is actually $100,000 per household. And I would just ask you and other conservatives to put it in those personal terms. I think it would be much more effective for our message going forward.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for the call, Nancy. We try to atomize it like that, try to do things on a per capita basis and make them relevant. We do that with property taxes, too. We do that with these ballot initiatives and what it would translate into in terms of an increase in property taxes or marginal tax rates and what it would translate into households at different income levels and so forth. But when it comes to government spending, there's a problem, too, because there's a real disconnect, it seems to me, even when you put it in granular terms like you're describing. And the problem is when you say this is going to cost every American household $100,000 over whatever, they just don't believe it. It's sort of like the pension folly. They just don't believe that actuarial tables matter when it comes to public sector pensions. They just don't believe that debt matters when it comes to government because we'll never have to pay it back. We're never going to pay it back. It's too much to pay back $30 trillion. So that's not going to happen. So they'll just print money or they'll just figure out a way or things will just work themselves out. I just don't think and part of that is because both parties have been reckless spenders. I just don't think that there's very many people with credibility on it. And because people are so bad at connecting dots, they don't see the implications of this sort of tax and spend profligacy. And they just think it's a free lunch, more or less. I don't know. I don't know how to drive those issues home to people more effectively than people that are a lot more effective communicators than me have tried. I don't know. It's a frustration. I mean, I appreciate your perspective, but I don't know that that has the resonance you hope it would. Diane in Buffalo Grove.
Hi. I paid my taxes, my personal taxes, in April. I used certified mail. I have the receipt from the government that it was received in April. I have the IRS who says, gee, we didn't receive it. And I'm arguing, hi, here's the receipt. You received it. Where's my refund? And I'm told, well, just because we received it doesn't mean that we've opened it. And by the way, I did get my Illinois refund in July. My question, I'm wondering if you can ask everybody else in Metro Chicago and your listening areas, everybody get your tax refund? Because this, to me, is pathetic.
Okay. Well, you put it out there. And you may want to contact your duly elected Congress being there, Raja, and see what he has to say about it. Maybe he could go troubleshoot at the IRS for you.
Not happening, as I've argued with them for over, 2 months now. Where's my refund? Even Illinois got my refund to me in July, and I'm sitting here, certified mail. The quote is, just because you sent it doesn't mean we opened it.
That's why they need 75,000 more IRS agents. They don't have anybody to open the mail over there, Diane. Oh, boy. John in Mundelein.
John, hello?
Mundelein. Yeah, you're on.
Hey, Donald Trump said the other day in an interview that it was common sense for his supporters to be chanting "Hang Mike Pence" as they stormed the Capitol, hoping to overturn the election. I'm wondering how you guys feel about a president of the United States saying it's common sense for his supporters to want to hang his vice president.
I didn't see that. Is that true? I didn't see Donald Trump say that's a specific.
Well, it's in Jonathan
about
Carl's book that just was released, and he said he had pictures too of Pence hiding, but he didn't publish them.
Did Donald Trump say specifically that it was common sense for people to chant "Hang Mike Pence"?
No, I never saw that.
I haven't seen that. So,
but there was a level of fear there for Mike Pence, and I thought I stand behind Mike Pence because I think he's done right by President Trump the whole time, and then Trump just at the end, their relationship, he didn't support him at all. Trump didn't.
Yeah, right. That's fine, but that's not the question. So I'm not going to. I don't know that he said that. I haven't seen that, and considering the source, John from Mundelein, I'm not going to believe it until there's some evidence provided. But anybody chanting "Hang Mike Pence" or "Hang people"? No, I don't support that. Okay. John from Mundelein, leftist hack. John in Janesville.
Hey, yeah, I was just got on Twitter, and I just became aware of some things that I think your audience should know. First of all, if you're white, you might just be a racist. If you have ever had Fox News on your cable subscription, you just might be a racist. If you drive anything other than a Prius or a Subaru Outback, you might just be a racist. If you have ever saw somebody with a Trump bumper sticker on your car and did not flip them off, you might just be a racist.
All right. Thanks, John / Jeff Foxworthy from Janesville. Appreciate it. Tom in Warrenville.
Hello. Hey, Tom. I wanted to comment on forget the numbskull's name, who asked, what kind of society do you want to live in? Mm-hmm. I would like to turn that question around on him, because he clearly wants to live in a society where anarchy rules, arson, looting, property damage is all acceptable. I'd like to side with being able to protect yourself.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Mike in Franklin, Tennessee.
Hey, guys. You were talking about people who were leaving Chicago. We're in Franklin, Tennessee. Yesterday was Veterans Day. If you could have seen the parade, pouring rain, these kids smiling, USA, we love you. It reminded me when I was a kid and my father would take me to Michigan Avenue in Chicago. It was just a beautiful thing that I hadn't seen for years.
And you saw it in Franklin, Tennessee. There you go. Thanks for the call, Mike. And to close us out, style, Chuck in Delavan.
Chuck.
Hey, how you doing? This is Chuck from Delavan.
Yeah.
Hey, I listened to your thing, the radio station. I'm out pheasant hunting with my buddy today. So it might be windy. Anyway, they had them safe passage people last year. I got a buddy who works up there in the city, and he told me they got paid the whole year just to sit in there, and they never escorted anybody to school. So if they wanted to save money, they could have laid them guys off last year.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's your plans for the weekend, Chuck?
Yeah, what do you got?
My plans for the weekend, well, I'll be taking my girlfriend to the Abbey tomorrow night to go dancing.
Oh.
And I'm out with my buddy, his wife, not his wife, his girlfriend owns a bottle shop. I'm out here with Fred and Hank, a yellow lab and a black lab, but we haven't found any pheasants. anyway.
Good luck with the pheasants.
Of course,
and
that's what
the
you're
dancing,
doing. Yeah.
Chuck, from Delaware.
Yep, and then my buddy, we both forgot our thermoses.
Oh.
We both forgot our thermoses, so now we ain't got no coffee to drink. We're trying to take a break. Anyway, you guys have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate
it. Yeah, he's really out there. You hear the wind whipping.
Yeah, he really is. He's out there in so many ways, as Chuck from Delavan. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.